Welcome to episode 85 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for the week of October 22nd, 2007. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. In this week's episode of the Fredcast, there's quite a bit of news to catch up on, including the tragic death of a charity cyclist, Floyd Landis's final appeal, Pereiro gets his yellow jersey, the International Doping Summit, the Road Worlds, Paris Tours, the Giro di Lombardia, and the winner of the 2007 Pro Tour. We also have to catch up on a number of product recalls, and there's much more news besides that. Following the news, two listener-submitted reviews I know you're really going to enjoy: a Halloween-themed cycling accessory, upcoming events and races, and PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Welcome back to another episode of the Fredcast, and it is great to have you here with us. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for staying subscribed. After this show, it looks like the Fredcast should be getting back to its normal schedule. We've had a lot going on. I moved, got a new job, went to Interbike, had my MS ride that I was the chairman of. That is all over. Well, the job continues, and it's a good job, so don't get me wrong. But I should be able to get back to a regular schedule for the Fredcast right away. But this show really is, as I teased at the beginning, going to be a review of a lot of the news that has gone on over the last couple of weeks since Interbike, especially the news as regards professional cycling. But beforehand, just a couple of partly personal notes. Now, as you know, less than 2 weeks ago, I was riding my bike from Irvine to San Diego in California as part of the MS Beta Bay Bike Tour. Now, first of all, I want to thank so many of you that have donated to my efforts to raise money for MS on behalf of my wife, Donna, as well as a lot of my friends who I have come to know very well who are battling this illness. There's still time to donate if you'd like to. I sure would appreciate it. There are links in the show notes, as well as a link on the website at www.thefredcast.com. Thanks to all of you who have donated, and thanks to all of you who would consider doing so in the next couple of days and weeks. We appreciate it. Now, the ride was awesome. Now, other than a little bit of rain on Saturday morning, it was a great weekend. We were really privileged to be riding through some of the most beautiful communities in the nation. Unfortunately, as I record this, a lot of that has changed. As you know, Southern California is enduring one of the worst firestorms in memory. I have friends and teammates who are right now camping out in evacuation shelters, hotels, friends' homes, even their own offices. And all of them are wondering whether or not they have a house to go home to. Now, if you listen to the Spokesman podcast, you know Tim Jackson from Mozzie Bicycles. And as he is noting on his blog, there are even people in the bike industry who are touched by this tragedy as well. So at a time like this, it's really impossible not to be concerned and emotional. And I know I've been glued to the internet coverage, the live feeds that are coming from a lot of the local TV stations that I knew when I lived in Southern California. And their coverage has been awesome, from KTTV in Los Angeles, that's the Fox affiliate, to the website for Sign On San Diego that has just done a great job keeping people informed down there in San Diego. Even at my old home station at the Santa Clarita Sheriff Station, they have a brand new website. And up until recently, they were giving updates on the fires that were occurring up there. So my thoughts and prayers, as I know yours, go out to everyone from Santa Barbara all the way down to Mexico who's been touched by this tragedy. If you'd like to help out, I have put a link in the show notes for an article from the LA Times that gives you a number of different resources that you can go to help out and pitch in and help those people who have been affected by these fires. There have been thousands of homes lost. A couple of people have lost their lives. It really is a tragedy. Whatever you can do to help would be fantastic. Thanks so much for listening to this partly personal portion of the Fredcast. Well, not to keep the show on a downer, but as we start the news, I do have a really sad story to tell you about. And this is the story of Lee Ann Berry. At the age of 5 and a half, Leanne was hit by a car. She was in a coma for a month. She had to relearn how to walk and how to talk. Her left side was partially paralyzed, and her right side was ultimately left with tremors. She had years of speech therapy, occupational and physical therapy, and only when she was in her late teens did she finally have a life-changing brain surgery, which allowed her to regain the use of her body. And she was finally able to do all the things she remembered doing as a young child, like simple things, eating and drinking with her right hand or opening a door with her right hand. She could finally greet a person with a handshake. Can you imagine what that was like? Well, a few years ago, Leanne and her husband, Ben, started the BIG ride. And BIG stands for Brain Injury's Greatest Journey. And this ride was intended to raise awareness for people with brain injuries, much like we've discussed in the Saul Raisin case. Now, the BIG ride began in 2001. As a matter of fact, they were in the middle of their ride on September 11th, 2001. And for a time, Leanne says in her testimony on the BIG ride website that for a time she really was considering not going on. But she did persevere, and she collected signatures on cards which went to the Pentagon and to a restaurant in New York City. And it became sort of cathartic for people to sign those cards and get involved. And then in 2003, well, in the middle of their ride, there were forest fires that forced them to divert from their normal route. Then in 2005, Hurricane Katrina happened in the middle of their ride, and they ended up having to go through some of those areas hit by Katrina and by Hurricane Rita. And now comes 2007. Well, last week, Leanne was on the last leg of the 2007 BIG ride when she and her riding partner were hit and killed by a driver on a rural road in Lancaster County, South Carolina. Leanne was 43 years old when she passed away on U.S. Highway 521. Now, at the moment, charges are pending against the driver. The problem is that they don't know, because there were no witnesses, how fast the driver was going, where Leanne and her partner were riding at the time, whether they were along the right shoulder or whether they were in the middle of the highway. Even still, this is a tragedy for Leanne and her family, for her husband Ben, and for her son. And our thoughts and prayers go out to her. And if you are interested in learning more about her, if you're interested in learning more about the BIG ride, I've put links in the show notes. It's a tragedy whenever anyone passes away. It hits home when it's a cyclist. And when it's somebody involved in a charity, as many of us are involved in charity rides, it hits home even deeper. So thoughts and prayers go out to her family, and hope you'll visit the website to learn just a little bit more about her cause. Okay, well, let's get to some professional racing news. And as I told you, we're going to be doing just a little bit of review over the last couple of weeks. And one of the things that I want to review is the fact that Floyd Landis has announced that he will indeed appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport in Switzerland to overturn the decision against him by the World Anti-Doping and the U.S. Anti-Doping agencies. Said Floyd on his blog, quote, "Knowing that the accusations against me are simply wrong, and having risked all my energy and resources, including those of my family, friends, and supporters, to show clearly that I won the 2006 Tour de France fair and square, I will continue to fight for what I know is right. Doping in sport seems to continue to get worse under the current anti-doping system, and this is only a part of the huge amount of proof that the WADA-USADA system needs a total overhaul. I will continue to work to clear my name and fight for change in the name of fairness and justice. No matter the final outcome of my case, there must be change in the current system if athletes can ever hope to compete on a level playing field and return to the joy and inspiration that sport can bring all of us." Now, the Court of Arbitration for Sport is the court of last resort for athletes. This is Floyd's last chance at an appeal. Now, a lot of people have pointed out that typically the Court of Arbitration for Sport adheres to what's called a strict liability policy, which is something that WADA and the IOC have always wanted. And simply, strict liability says it doesn't matter in the case of a couple of athletes that have gone in front of the Court of Arbitration for Sport before. It doesn't matter whether you took doping products knowingly or whether you did it by mistake. Even if you ingested it in an over-the-counter product that had nothing to do with doping and you didn't even know that the substances were in it, under those cases, you're still considered guilty under strict liability. However, I found a recent article that pointed out the case of Canadian snowboarder Ross Rebagliati, and he was involved in a case in 1998 when the Court of Arbitration for Sport said that he could keep his Olympic gold medal in snowboarding despite a positive test for marijuana use. Basically, what happened was two things. One, Rebagliati said that he was the victim of so-called quote-unquote passive smoke, and he was cleared due to a lack of any formal agreement on marijuana testing between the IOC and the International Ski Federation. But perhaps more to the point is the case that I also found of Spanish cyclist Iñigo Landaluz, who was cleared by the Court of Arbitration for Sport of doping charges in December of 2006 after they found that the lab technician who conducted his B sample was the same technician who analyzed his A sample. Now, since Floyd's lawyers are alleging procedural errors on the part of this French laboratory involved in testing Floyd's samples, then this Landaluz case would be a great hook on which to hang their hats. We'll find out what happens as this goes to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. I think we're in for another few months of waiting. I will, of course, keep you posted right here. And I'll keep you posted in a more timely fashion, I promise. Meanwhile, into Tour de France-related instances, the French Anti-Doping Agency, and that's abbreviated AFLD, decided that they are going to pursue doping charges against Floyd Landis. And they're doing this because they need to close a legal loophole. You'll remember that we've been talking here on the show about the fact that the Tour de France may or may not be a part of the UCI Pro Tour. And if it's not part of the UCI, well, Floyd has been banned by the UCI from competition, but he hasn't been banned by French authorities. So the French must pursue this case against Floyd if they desire to keep Floyd out of the Tour de France. And speaking of keeping Floyd Landis out of the Tour de France, Floyd Landis is now officially no longer the owner of the final yellow jersey from the 2006 Tour de France, because instead it has now been awarded to 30-year-old Spaniard Oscar Pereiro, the second place finisher in Paris on the Champs-Élysées in 2006. According to Oscar Pereiro, when he was asked about Floyd's appeal to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, he said, quote, "This is a very important day for me, and I'm not going to ruin it by thinking about any appeal." He went on to say, "I feel sorry for him," talking about Floyd. "He was disqualified after the biggest triumph of his life and won't be able to enjoy it. But as a sportsman, you have to stick to the rules." Now, not one to be without comment, ASO and Tour de France director Christian Prudhomme said that Pereiro was absolutely the winner of the Tour de France. He went on to say, quote, "At last, we have a winner. It has been too long for Oscar Pereiro, his team, and for Spain, and too long for the Tour de France." Read too long for Christian Prudhomme. But the story has finally come to an end. So this may be the end of the chapter for the 2006 Tour de France. It is now up to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. They will be the last word. Can you imagine how interesting it would be if the Court of Arbitration for Sport does grant the appeal on behalf of Floyd Landis, thereby saying that he did not dope? Then Christian Prudhomme would end up having to eat his words and hand Floyd Landis his jersey back. Wouldn't that be an interesting turn of events? So Floyd's not the Tour de France winner of 2006, Pereiro is, but the undisputed winner of the 2007 Tour de France is Alberto Contador, formerly of Team Discovery. Levi Leipheimer is also formerly of Team Discovery, and come to think of it, so are Vyacheslav Ekimov and Johan Brunel. Well, guess what? They are now all a part of Team Astana. Team Astana, as you know, is the team that had its problems this year, specifically with doping. It was an up and down Tour de France for Team Astana in 2007. But now, it looks to be like some of the teams we've talked about recently, some of the newer teams, a big competitor in the 2008 UCI Pro Tour. Now, Levi Leipheimer, who turned 34 today, happy birthday, Levi, told ESPN.com that he signed a two-year contract with Astana. In talking about the signing, he said, quote, "A lot of that has to do with Johan and the staff and how comfortable I am with them. It works for me, so why should I change it? It's not the exact same riders, but there will be the same philosophy and understanding there." Said Alberto Contador, quote, "After studying the different offers I've received, I've opted for Astana because it is a totally new project, which is going to put together a great team for me and for the Tour de France. Astana is going to be another one of those tough teams in 2008, much like we discussed with Team Slipstream Chipotle, and I'll have more on them a little bit later in the show. So what's probably the topic that's gotten the most airtime on the Fredcast and the most ink in sporting and cycling magazines? Well, I think it goes without saying that it's doping. And as we've reported here on the Fredcast recently, the UCI and WADA got together to meet in Paris over the last couple of days to have what they called their International Doping Summit. Curiously missing from the summit are the people that could probably, well, shed the most light perhaps on the situation and probably have the most to offer. And that is, hello, the riders. And not a single rider was in attendance at this doping summit. So what were the results from this International Doping Summit in Paris? Well, I think the most significant thing that came out of the summit was something that the UCI actually announced prior to the summit, and that is what they're calling their biological passport or the athlete passport. And this simply would be a test developed by a laboratory that would look at what could be hundreds or even thousands of biological markers through a series of blood tests to determine baseline levels for certain biological markers in a person's body. And then changes in those level could indicate that athlete's reaction to doping. And therefore, if these markers do change, then an athlete could be sanctioned or excluded from competition. Well, of course, Dick Pound, the chairman of the World Anti-Doping Agency, or WADA, had a lot to say on this subject. He said, quote, "I think the Cycling Federation looked into the abyss last year after the second consecutive nightmare in the Tour de France and saw the sponsors leaving and saw that they were looking at extinction if they didn't do something immediately. Now we finally have a live federation that is committed to making a big change. They're doing something to save themselves." Now, according to Pat McQuaid, the head of the UCI, the cost of this initiative could reach more than $4 million and would be financed mostly by the UCI and by the cycling teams. He also said that in 2008, the number of doping tests would increase by 50% to about 15,000 over the entire season. Now, in the end here, as far as I can tell, the devil is in the details. Remember, I said at the top of this story that this was going to be created by a laboratory. Which laboratory? Cycling's been plagued by issues with at least a certain laboratory that we've all heard about quite a bit. So which laboratory is going to administer, which laboratory is going to develop this program? Will the athletes allow their blood to be taken in this way to create this biological marker? And how will it work? Again, the devil is in the details. According to Don Catlin, the head of the Anti-Doping Research Institute and part of WADA's Health, Medical, and Research Committee, he believes that, quote, "It means that cycling is certainly moving in the right direction, and I'm very pleased to see this kind of action. It can do nothing but good." Again, we'll see if the teams and the athletes sign on to it and whether or not this biological passport program really will be ready in time for the 2008 Pro Tour. Still talking about the Tour de France and doping, you will recall that Iban Mayo from Spain had a positive A sample test on July 24th during this year's Tour de France. His B sample has now been tested, and as a result of that test, the Spanish Cycling Federation has now cleared Iban Mayo of any doping-related charges, thereby ensuring that he will not have a suspension for 2 years? Or does it ensure that? Because meanwhile, the UCI is saying that they do not believe that this second test is conclusive. Let's go back for a second. If you're new to the show, or perhaps maybe you've forgotten, let's talk a little bit about the way this testing procedure works. For whatever reason, whether you win a stage or you're the yellow jersey winner or you're randomly chosen, you are asked to give a sample to the doping control at the end of a stage of a race. You give your sample. That sample is separated into an A and a B. The A sample is given to the lab and the lab tests it. If that sample comes back negative, then you are presumed not to have doped. However, if that sample comes back positive, then you are entitled to have your B sample, or the second half of your sample, retested. If that test comes back negative, then it is considered conclusive proof that you did not dope. Because if they can't get the two samples to agree, then they have no proof of doping. You are cleared. And that seems to be what happened in the case of Ebon Mayo. A test came back positive, the B test came back negative. But the UCI doesn't agree, and for the following reason. During the Tour de France, Mayo's sample was tested by a French laboratory. When it was requested that that sample be tested again, that the B sample be tested, it was sent to Belgium because the French lab was closed for a holiday. It was sent to a lab in Ghent. This lab in Ghent tested the sample and came up with different results from the French lab. Now, what the UCI is saying is that because the Belgian lab uses slightly different procedures and different testing than the French lab, then what they want is the French lab to test the B sample before they're satisfied that Mayo did not dope or that Mayo's A sample and B sample didn't agree. And they're actually quite upset with the Spanish Federation for clearing Mayo based on this information. But again, it brings up that same question. The same question we keep hearing, the same thing. We talked about it a couple of stories ago about the biological passport. We talked about it a couple of stories ago in regards to the Floyd Landis situation. If there aren't set procedures in place that are used from lab to lab to lab, from technician to technician to technician, then these tests will never be trusted, and it will, this just cycle will continue. So it seems to me that the UCI really does need to accept this Belgian lab's conclusions, but of course, I don't think they're going to listen to me. And finally, in our last bit of doping news for this week, Giro d'Italia winner and leader of this year's Pro Tour, Danilo De Luca, got a 3-month ban for doping offenses following a hearing at the Italian Olympic Committee, also known as CONI. Now, CONI originally recommended a 4-month ban for De Luca, and this was because of his ties to a certain Dr. Carlo Santuccione, who served a 5-year suspension from 1995 to 2000. In case you're not familiar with Santuccione, he was the one who was allegedly involved in providing athletes with doping products in a scandal that became known as Oil for Drugs. Said De Luca, quote, "It's an injustice. I'm absolutely convinced of my innocence." What does this mean for De Luca and for his Pro Tour chances for this year? It means that his Pro Tour chances are over and that he will be removed from the top spot on the Pro Tour standing. It also meant that he had to be pulled out of this year's Road Worlds and that he would not be able to race in the recently completed Giro di Lombardia. So with that bit of good news, let's get on to the results of the racing that's taken place over the last couple of weeks while we've been busy with Interbike and MS bike tours and everything else. Well, let's start with the aforementioned Road Worlds, and let's look at the men's individual time trial. Anybody remember the name Fabian Cancellara? Think you can remember him wearing a yellow jersey? Well, that's because he had the yellow jersey in this year's Tour de France for quite some time, but he was also wearing the rainbow jersey as the winner of last year's individual time trial world championships. And he did it again. This year, Fabian Cancellara won the individual time trial in Stuttgart at the Road Worlds, and he did so in 55 minutes, 41.35 seconds. Second place went to Laszlo Bodrogi from Hungary, 52.06 seconds back. Then Steph Clement from the Netherlands, 57.71 seconds back. Said Consolar at the end of the race, quote, "It was a hard thing. There was bigger pressure on me than last year. I'm not in the same condition as last year. I'm pretty satisfied. We will drink a glass of champagne or more." Now, last year, Consolar won, and he ended the three-year reign of Australia's Michael Rogers. Pretty amazing feat for Consolar. Congratulations to him. And in case you're wondering, a lot of folks in the United States were pinning their hopes on Utah's Dave Zabriskie. Dave came in 12th in this year's Elite Men's Time Trial, finishing 2 minutes, 13.8 seconds behind Consolara. Another American in the top 20 at the number 20 spot, Jason McCartney from Iowa, 2 minutes, 42.96 seconds back of the leader. So congratulations to Fabian Consolara. He will be in Rainbow for yet another year. Well, the last time we talked about the Road Worlds here on the Fredcast, I was talking about world champion and Olympic champion Paolo Bettini. And we were talking about the fact that the Germans were trying to keep Bettini from competing in Stuttgart, specifically because Bettini has refused to sign that anti-doping pledge that the UCI came out with in advance of the Tour de France. Now, specifically, Bettini is unhappy with the clause in that pledge that forces any rider that's given a doping ban of 2 years to pay a year's salary over and above the standard fine. Now, Bettini has obviously distanced himself from doping in professional cycling, but he doesn't feel that the pledge is something that he wants to sign. Nevertheless, he was allowed to race, and for Bettini, like Consolara, it was two for two. Bettini did win, once again, the right to wear that rainbow jersey for one more year in the road racing portion of the World Championships in Stuttgart. Second place went to Russian Alexander Kolobnev, and third to Germany's Stefan Schumacher. After the race, Bettini was quite emotional. With tears in his eyes, he said, quote, "It was not an easy win, and I say thanks to all of Italy. It was a tough week for me. They accused me of everything, and I responded with victory." I don't know about you, but I've seen Bettini race. I think he's a class act. Congratulations to him for winning. Now, the UCI has criticized Bettini quite strongly for his refusal to sign that anti-doping pledge. And Pat McQuaid, who probably has a little bit more to say than this, was quoted as saying, "He came, he saw, he conquered. A rider who can win a race under the pressure he's been under is a classic, special rider." And I think that that's a classy, very gentlemanly statement from Pat McQuaid on Bettini's winning the rainbow jersey yet one more time. Congratulations, Paolo. But let's not leave the women out of the world championship story, because the United States once again did phenomenally well at this year's elite women's time trial. You know, the name Armstrong is very famous in professional cycling among men. And if you follow women's cycling, the name Armstrong is probably equally as famous. And of course, here we're talking about Kristen Armstrong from Boise, Idaho. Last year's world champion, the year before, the bronze medalist, and this year, the silver medalist in the elite women's time trial. First place went to Hanka Kupfernagel from Germany, in 34 minutes, 43.79 seconds. Kristen came in just 23.47 seconds behind Hanka. Third, Christian Soder from Austria, 41.53 seconds back. Fourth, Amber Nevin from Irvine, California. And in fifth, Christine Thorburn from Sunnyvale, California. Now, because this is her third career world championship medal, Kristen Armstrong is now one of only two Americans to win three or more world championship medals on the road, joining Greg LeMond, who got four road race medals in his career, a gold in 83 and in 89, and silvers in 82 and 85. And with this silver medal performance, Kristen Armstrong also met the first automatic nomination standard for the 2008 Olympic Games in Beijing, and she now will absolutely be on the Olympic team for the United States. After the race, Kristen said, quote, "After having the world championship jersey, getting second place isn't easy. It was a difficult day, and it's hard to be world champion every year. Yesterday, I told my teammates the strongest girl will win today because of the technical part of the flats. There wasn't any time to rest during the course. I knew Honka was a dark horse coming in because she typically doesn't race with us all year, but I knew she was a strong girl." A classy statement from a classy rider, your silver medalist, Kristen Armstrong. And in the road portion of the Women's World Championships, it was Marta Bastianelli from Italy who rode away with first place, even after repairing a loose chain during her breakaway. She was still able to hold off a chasing pack to win the road race. Defending champion Marion Vos of the Netherlands was 6 seconds back, winning second place in a sprint ahead of Giorgia Bronzini from Italy for the bronze. So Italy did quite well this year at the Road Worlds, as did the United States. Congratulations to all of the new world champions in professional cycling. And finally, in our recap of racing results, it's time to look at the Pro Tour. I teased it a little bit earlier, but let's talk about the last couple of races of the season. I told you that on October 14th, we would have Paris Tours. This is the 101st edition of Paris Tours, and it is a 256-kilometer single-day race. And this year, it was won by Italian Alessandro Petacchi of Team Milram. Now, Petacchi has had sort of an up-and-down year this year because you may recall that he was suspected of doping because of his use of the asthma drug salbutamol. We've talked about this several times, but he was later cleared by the Italian Cycling Federation, who put the result down to human error, even though the Italian Olympic Committee has appealed to the Court of Arbitration for Sport. Now, Petacchi won in a final finish line sprint, and he was led out by another of Milram's most famous riders, German Eric Zabel. Petacchi edged out second-place finisher Francesco Cicci, also from Italy, in that final sprint, and third place went to Oscar Frere. At the end of the race, Petacchi was especially complimentary about Eric Zabel, who beat him in 2003 in this race when they were on opposing teams. He said, quote, "Eric did an incredible job in the final sprint. In the end, I'm basically glad he beat me in 2003. I made the mistake of setting off too early in the sprint, and I seized up in the final 50 meters. I learned my lesson, and this time I set off at just the right time. To win in this way with him leading me out, it's as if I won twice. After Milan-San Remo, it's my best victory." Now, he was questioned about his up-and-down year and about the drug allegations, and he said, "This season has been the most difficult of my career. It began badly with my broken knee last year, and after the Giro, other problems started. I went through every stage of suffering, even though I won two stages at the Vuelta. Finally, without a doubt, it's today that I've had the best day of the year." Now, following this race, Danilo De Luca was still sitting in first place of the Pro Tour, but then, of course, came his suspension, and he dropped off, and it was then Cadel Evans' Pro Tour to lose. But that was not to happen. At the final race of the year, on October 20th, this year's Giro di Lombardia, and in this year's Italian Classic, it was Damiano Cuniego from Italy and the Lampre team who took the victory, edging out his compatriot Ricardo Rico from Saunier Duval at 5 hours, 52 minutes, and 48 seconds. Third place went to Samuel Sanchez from Euskaltel Euskadi, 10 seconds back. Fourth, Andy Schleck from Luxembourg from Team CSC, also 10 seconds back. Same time in fifth, David Rebellin from Italy and Gerald Steiner. And in sixth, your new Pro Tour winner for 2007, Cadel Evans from Australia and Predictor Lotto, also 10 seconds back. Now, going back to Damiano Cuniego, at the end of the race, he was quoted as saying, quote, "This is a response to people who criticized me, who said Damiano doesn't win anymore." Well, Damiano obviously does continue to win, and so does Cadell Evans. The former mountain biker, Cadell Evans, now a road racer, wins the Pro Tour title at the end of this season. And quite honestly, I suppose it's in part thanks to the fact that Danilo De Luca was handed down that suspension, because had De Luca raced here and done well, and we'll never know, it might have been a different result. But at the end of this year's Pro Tour season, first place went to Cadell Evans from Australia with 247 points. Second, David Rebellin from Italy with 197. And third, your Tour de France winner, Alberto Contador, with 191 points. Fourth place went to Alejandro Valverde with 190 points. And fifth went to Oscar Freire with 182 points. When he won the Pro Tour victory, Cadell Evans was quoted as saying, "I think the Pro Tour shows who is the best rider of the season, and I'm very proud to have won it. My goal for the season was to do a good Tour de France, and I was happy with second place, but I'd also hope to do well in the Pro Tour. I didn't expect to win it, but it's a very nice end-of-season bonus, and I bet that's true, Cadell. Congratulations." As far as the team standings at the end of the Pro Tour, first place went to Team CSC, second, Liquigas, third, Castepagna, fourth, AG2R, and fifth went to Team Quickstep from Belgium. As far as the nations in the Pro Tour, first place went to Spain. No surprise there, considering the slate of victories that Spanish riders had this year. Second to Italy, third Australia, fourth the Russian Federation, and the fifth place winner in this year's Pro Tour for 2007 was Luxembourg. So that is it for the 2007 Pro Tour, and it's time to start looking forward to 2008. And some really great news for those of you who are Australian cycling fans, and that's because the Tour Down Under has gained Pro Tour status for 2008, and it will kick off the 2008 Pro Tour season January 20th through the 27th. Now, the rest of the calendar then commences in April with the Ronde van Vlaanderen in Belgium, heading all the way through until October the 5th, which will be the final race of the 2008 Pro Tour season. That race is yet to be announced, and the promoter is also yet to be announced. Now, don't forget that next year we also have the Olympic Games in China, and the World Championships will be held in Italy September 25th for the time trial and September 28th for the road race. Now, we've talked about this before. The big three, the Vuelta a España, the Tour de France, and the Giro d'Italia, will not be part of the international Pro Tour calendar. They're going to be part of what's called the UCI Europe Tour. And while the UCI has asked specifically the Tour de France to invite all 18 Pro Tour teams, as of right now, the Tour de France is saying that they're going to invite whomever they wish to the Tour de France. And for the most part, the Pro Tour calendar and the calendar from the new UCI Europe Tour, there really are no conflicts to be concerned about. So for the most part, no conflicts that will happen between those two calendars, and that will be your 2008 Pro Cycling calendar. Hope it's going to be a great year. Speaking of a great year and a race that I'm looking forward to, and what I'm sorry that didn't happen this year, and you guys have asked me a lot of questions about it, the Tour of Utah is on for 2008. Now, as you know, it didn't happen in 2007 because of some financial constraints. Specifically, I think they were having some issues getting enough sponsors on board to sponsor the race. But Greg Miller, who is the chairman of the 2008 Larry H. Miller Tour of Utah, presented by Zions Bank, announced that the tour will indeed happen in 2008. It will feature 342 miles, 30,000 feet of climbing in 5 days, and the dates will be August the 13th through the 17th, 2008. and you know that I'm going to be on hand to cover this race because it's right in my backyard. Stage one on August 13th goes from Nephi to Nephi. August 14th is Salt Lake to Ogden. August 15th, a Criterium in downtown Salt Lake City. That should be exciting. August 16th, literally right in my backyard, Deer Valley to Snowbird. And then August 17th, stage five, the Miller Motorsports Park individual time trial, an 18-mile time trial, starting and finishing at the Miller Motorsports Park in Tooele, Utah. It's going to be a great event, and I hope that a lot of you will come out and join me for this year's 2008 Tour of Utah. I'm excited about that one. And while we're on the subject of Utah, it looks like USA Cycling is potentially mulling a move to Utah, specifically to Ogden, Utah. Ogden's about 20 to 30 minutes north of downtown Salt Lake City, and it is a growing area. I've seen a lot of articles in the papers talking about how they're attracting a lot of businesses from around the country who are looking for a new business-friendly environment. Well, what's going on is that the USOC is planning to tear down a building that they've got at the Olympic Training Center in Colorado Springs, and that building houses a number of what are called national governing bodies. And the largest of those, apparently, is USA Cycling. And they are now considering moving their 48-employee organization to Ogden, Utah. According to Andy Lee, the communications coordinator for USA Cycling, quote, "It's extremely premature, however, to speculate as to when or where a move will happen. There is considerable interest from the Ogden community to relocate our national headquarters there. However, that interest has not yet materialized into anything beyond discussions at this point. We are also exploring other options and opportunities that would keep our headquarters in Colorado Springs." Now, once again, I suppose this is a personal wish. I'd love to see USA Cycling move to Ogden. It would give me more access to the organization and the ability to cover their events just that much better. However, if they can find a place in Colorado Springs and not displace current employees, well, then I suppose that really would be better. But I will bring you that news as it happens. Well, that's going to do it for the race news, and I just have to breathe a sigh of relief. We are 42 minutes into this podcast, and all we've done for the most part is talk about racing. Let's talk about a little bit of more general consumer news that's happened over the last couple of weeks. Well, unfortunately, over the last couple of weeks, there have been four product recalls in the bicycle business. I'm going to bring all four of them to you because I think that that's something we need to do here on the Fredcast. And the first, this was a relatively small recall. This is Rocky Mountain Bikes. These are Solo bikes, Solo CR50, Solo CR70, and Solo CR-LTD bicycles. There's only about 45 of them that were produced, but it's a pretty serious problem. The head tube can detach from the rest of the frame, and you can imagine, now, you know, the CPSC says, posing a fall hazard to consumers. That's a little bit more than a fall hazard. That could be really hazardous to your health. It involves, as I said, all those Solo brand bicycles. The CR50 and the CR70 are 2006 models, and the CR-LTD are 2007 models. These bikes were sold between August of 2006 through July of 2007 for between $2,000 and $5,850. Do I need to say don't use these anymore and return them to the bike store where you purchased them to receive a free replacement frame, a full refund, or a credit? And of course, in the show notes, you'll find links to the Rocky Mountain website where you can find info on this recall. And of course, on all these recalls I'm talking about, you'll find in the show notes individual links to the company's websites and links to the Consumer Product Safety Commission's website with information about these recalls. Now, the next recall is for Reynolds UL, that's Uniform Lima, bicycle forks. There were about 330 of these produced, and the issue here is that the fork tips, by which I think they mean the dropouts, could separate from the fork legs, causing the wheel to come loose from the fork while riding, and again, in the CPSC's parlance, this could pose a serious fall hazard to riders. Now, so far, there have been no incidents or injuries reported associated with this recall, and this involves, once again, Reynolds UL bicycle fork models with 43-millimeter and 50-millimeter rakes with serial numbers 09100 through 1403. Now you can find the serial number decal on the lower steer tube. And to see the serial number, guess what? You have to remove the fork from the frame. My personal opinion is if you've got a Reynolds UL bike fork, don't take a chance. Have it checked out by your bike dealer. And these were sold between October 2006 and May 2007 for about $500. And they were included in 2007 bicycle frame kits from Independent Fabrication, Lightspeed, Linsky, Merlin, Parley, Rock Lobster, Spectrum, Strong, and Vicious. Go to your local bike dealer, have your bike checked out if it's got a Reynolds UL fork, and make sure it's not one of these forks. If it is, of course, you will get a free replacement from Reynolds when you go to your local dealer. Next, and this may not cover some of you Freds, but I've got to mention it because it could involve your kids, and so it's pretty important. These are Huffy brand bikes, 2007 model Howler and Highland bicycles. This is a much larger recall. Here, we're talking about 22,000 bikes that are affected by this recall. Again, pretty serious. The crank can unexpectedly come off, causing the rider to lose control. Guess what? Fall and suffer serious injuries. Huffy's received two reports of cranks falling off of bikes, and this has resulted in one injury. Once again, this is 2007 model year multi-speed bicycles with 26-inch, 24-inch, or 20-inch wheels. The Howler was sold in black, blue, and red, and the Highland was sold in white and blue. These were sold through Kmart stores in the United States from May 2007 through July 2007 for between $80 and $100. Get these checked out right away. Contact Huffy, the links are in the show notes, to get instructions on how to tighten the crank properly to make sure that it doesn't fall off. And our final recall for this week, Oro disc brakes. Again, about 5,700 of these brakes, and these were manufactured by Formula of Italy. The issue here is that the brake lever can actually fall off, and you can imagine that's going to mean you can't activate your brakes. Now, obviously, these are mountain bike brakes we're talking about, and the models included in the recall are the Oro K18, Oro K24, Oro Puro, and Oro Bianco models with serial numbers less than 295237. Once again, serial numbers less than 295237, and the serial number can be located on the brake body above the Made in Italy label. These were sold at independent bike dealers nationwide from May 2005 through July 2007 for between $180 and $300. Contact your Formula brake dealer to get a free repair kit. Wow, that is enough recalls for me, but if you have one of the products covered by these recalls, please get them checked out right away. You know, in the past here on the Fredcast, we've talked a little bit about what we're supposed to call female Freds. A lot of people have said we should call them Fredettes. Other people have said that we should call them Ethels, but there certainly is now one way to know an Ethel when you see one, and that's if she's riding the new bicycle by Chanel. Yes, from the creators of Chanel No. 5 comes the new Chanel designer bicycle, complete with that famous double C Chanel logo as part of their spring and summer collection. As Fritz from Cyclicious points out, so far there's only fairly fuzzy photos of the city bike looking mode of transport on the web, but apparently this bike is going to be available in December. It will include quilted leather, which is one of the signatures of Chanel, and will retail for the pittance of just $12,400. Interested in buying one? They're apparently going to be available in stores starting in December. And on that stylish note, we will end this nearly hour-long newscast. A couple of quick announcements for you before we get into the features tonight and some great reviews of some rides. First of all, I want to talk about the Fredcast sock contest. I've gotten a number of entries into the contest, and the contest was supposed to run until October the 15th. Unfortunately, I didn't mention it enough on the last couple of shows, so we're going to extend the deadline to October the 31st. That gives you, well, by the time you hear this, about a week to get your designs in for the Fredcast socks. Remember, this contest is sponsored by the Sock Guy at www.sockguy.com. The winner will receive two free pairs of Fredcast socks and a laundry list full of great prizes, compliments of the Sock Guy. Remember, all designs do become the property of the Fredcast, and if you are a close personal friend or a family member of mine, unfortunately, you can't enter, but chances are you're going to get free socks out of me anyway. So you've got some great competition out there, but you still do have about another week to get your designs in. Please get those in to me. Send them to my email, thefredcast@gmail.com. Next up, before we get to the features, I want to talk about the fact that we have chosen the dates for the Fredcast tour in 2008. Mark your calendars right now, June 24th through July 4th, for the Fredcast Transalpine Adventure. We will be riding from Salzburg, Austria to Venice, Italy, including a trip over the Dolomites through some of the routes of the 2008 Giro d'Italia, which will have gone through the area just a few weeks before we get there. Now, plan the trip enough in advance that you can mark your calendars off and make sure that you've got the time off from work, but going through July 4th was intentional, since a lot of folks here in the United States will have that day off and a couple of days that week, so it should be easier to get the time off. Also, we are planning in ways that we can include your spouses or significant others, because I know a lot of you complained last time, it's tough to go on a trip to Europe without that spouse or significant other. So we're going to make sure that we have accommodations for them as well, so that they can enjoy the trip while you're out riding if that's not their thing. I mean, after all, who wouldn't want to go to Salzburg? Who wouldn't want to go to Venice? I think it's going to be an awesome trip. I will have more details for you around the middle of December. But please mark your calendars now so that you make sure that you've got the time. The reason I won't have the details until December is because that's when I'll be having my face-to-face meeting with my European partner on this trip. So mark your calendars, June 24th through July 4th for the Fredcast Transalpine Adventure. Spaces will be limited, so if you're interested, send me an email and let me know. Now, speaking of Italy, I have to tell you that you are about to listen to a really great trip report, and this came from listener Casey. Casey is a longtime fan of the Fredcast and a good friend of the show. Casey went to Italy and did some cycling, and I think you're going to be very interested in what he has to say. We've also talked about Casey on the show because he's the captain of Team Ventura. That's Casey's team that does the AIDS life cycle every year from San Francisco down to Los Angeles. Now, I've put links in the show notes for Casey's photos, which are charming and entertaining, as well as to the Italian Cycling Center, the place in Italy where Casey went, and also to his website for Team Ventura. So, Casey, take it away. Tell the rest of the Fredcast audience about your cycling trip to Italy.
I'm trying to remember when the feeling first came over me. Was it the time I saw Breaking Away? When Mrs. Salamone next door served me my first homemade spaghetti and meatballs? Maybe it was hearing Dean Martin sing That's Amore. Whatever it was, all my life I've felt I was an Italian trapped in an American's body. That's why I've always wanted to ride my bike in the land of Fausto Coppi, Marco Pantani, and Topo Gigio. So, with a little arm twisting from my brother-in-law Ben, I signed up for a week at the Italian Cycling Center. It's about an hour out of Venice in a village called Borso del Grappa. If you can't place it geographically, it's just northeast of Bassano del Grappa and just west of Crespano del Grappa and Paderno del Grappa, in the shadow of the mighty Monte Grappa. Here's the deal. The center's like summer camp for cyclists. You get a clean, comfortable room, three wonderful meals, yes, vino is included, and guided cycling tours of what have to be among the most beautiful places on earth. We're talking steering your bike down narrow European roads, the kind you see in the Giro d'Italia or the Tour de France, through vineyards, orchards, farms, and ancient walled cities, ruins of castles looking down from the mountains above, the musical sounds of Italian being spoken as you pedal your bici through the towns, the smells wafting from the trattorias and pasticcerias. If you're still not seeing it, check out David's show notes for a link to my pictures, or better yet, hop on a plane. Oh, and unlike a certain country I live in, motorists in Italy actually like cyclists. They even went out of their way to not hit me, which is a welcome change from the riding I do in Southern California. The rides roll out of the center at 8 a.m. every morning, and there's a ride for every kind of cyclist. George Pohl, the center's founder, and Yvonne Smith will take you on touring rides where you do a leisurely half-century, drink in the sights, down a cappuccino or two, and pause to take pictures. Trust me, you'll want to take lots of pictures. If you're not the kind of cyclist who likes to stop and smell the garlic, you can ride out with local cycling legend Leopoldo Ciccone, who'll give you a workout that would put me on life support. Leopoldo also runs a local cycling shop with the exotic name The Best. Well, in Italy, it's an exotic name. Then, after your ride, around 1:30, you'll come back to the Locanda Montegrappa, the inn where we take our meals, for a traditional Northern Italian three-course lunch. Primo, the first course, usually a pasta. Secondo, the second course, usually a meat dish. And dolce, dessert. The afternoons are sweet. After lunch, you can go riding again or pedal a half mile to the Residenza for a nap. I had Pavarotti's Greatest Hits on the iPod for one of my naps, and between the music and the garlic on my breath, I nearly reached nap nirvana. You can take a bus to Bassano del Grappa, the nearby city where you can explore and shop for a gift for the beautiful and extremely understanding wife who so kindly let you fly off to Europe without her. And get this, if you ask George or Yvonne nicely, they'll set up a tour of a local factory that makes cycling clothing. That's right, Italian cycling clothing wholesale. Top that, Club Med. Each evening we congregate back at the Locanda for a glass of Prosecco, the local sparkling wine. And then it's Primo, Secondo, and Dolce all over again. Trust me, nobody goes hungry in Italy. Now, if your knowledge of Italian is confined to a few phrases you picked up from The Sopranos, you may be shocked to learn that bada bing means absolutely nothing in Italian. You should think about picking up a little beginning Italiano. Some experts say the first words you should learn in Italian, or any language, are per favore and grazie, please and thank you. I say the first words you should learn in Italian are dove il gabinetto, which loosely translated means where's the toilet? The word ciao is not a demand for more pasta. Ciao is an informal way of greeting or saying goodbye to your friends. It's also the way you let other cyclists know you're there. Instead of an on your left, you give them a friendly ciao. I had a chance to try this out going through a little village. There was this woman pedaling down the street, her basket full of groceries, sort of lost in her thoughts. So I rode up behind her, and before I passed her, gave her a friendly ciao. Well, I guess she didn't hear me coming, and it startled her, and she shrieked and almost fell off her bicicletta. Which leads me to our next Italian expression. Mi dispiace. It means I'm sorry. Practice this one on the plane coming over. It'll come in handy. Since I came back from Italy, I've been wondering if an Italian went cycling in Southern California, would he find it as beautiful and inspiring as I found Italy? My guess? A real Italian would take one sip of what passes for cappuccino in this country and take the first plane back home. So would I recommend the Italian Cycling Center to my friends? In a heartbeat. Cost 140 euros a day, around 190 bucks, for wonderful food, wonderful cycling, and a room that's clean and comfortable, if a bit Spartan. The center encourages you to bring your own bike, and most airlines don't charge you to take a bike on an overseas flight. But if you choose not to, Leopoldo will rent you a wonderful Italian bike for 25 euros a day. So, what did I learn from my trip to Italy? Well, that I can't wait to get back there. That Italian people are warm and friendly and great cooks. And basically, that riding in Italy is just like being in heaven, only the food is better. For the Fredcast, I'm Casey Keller.
Well, I don't know about you, but I am ready to go today. That sounds awesome. And I have to tell you one of the great things, and I emailed Casey about this. I said, hey, you know, if you've got a yen to go back, just come with us in June because we're going to be cycling on part of the trip through that region of Italy where Casey spent his time at the Italian Cycling Center. And I told him, you know what, if you love the Prosecco so much, I'll be happy to toast Independence Day with you with a glass of Prosecco. And that goes for the rest of you as well. So make sure you check those calendars. Now, next up is another ride report. This one's not about a trip, but it's about an MS ride, one that I've been thinking of doing for a long time. This comes from listener Curtis, another longtime listener and good supporter. And by the way, Curtis, thank you very much for your donation to my MS fundraising at the MS Beta Bay Bike Tour. Now, before Curtis tells you about the MS Waves to Wine Bike Tour, which takes place in Northern California, I'm just going to take a couple of minutes to tell you about the MS Beta Bay Bike Tour that I participated in just a few weeks ago. Now, granted, I'm biased. I was the chairman of the planning committee for the last 2 years. But I've been doing the ride for about 5 years, and every year it has gotten better, stronger, and safer. And this year, our 25th anniversary was without a doubt the best yet. We started on a Saturday early in the morning in Irvine, California. As a matter of fact, the Century Riders started, well, it was dark when they got into the starting line chute. We gave them their safety information and off they went. And as they went out, it had rained the night before and there was a light drizzle falling. The general riders, who did about a 60-mile ride on day one from Irvine down to Carlsbad in San Diego County, they also started in a light rain. And that light rain continued off and on until we got down to about San Clemente. And then the glorious Southern California sunshine came out, and it was just a beautiful day. Along the way, we were extremely well supported by volunteers all over the route, announcing turns, letting us know where we needed to be cautious. That was a fantastic thing. The course was extremely well marked, and there were rest stops, seemed like everywhere, and they were extremely well stocked. If you're hearing a lot of adverbs, there's a reason for it. Adverbs and adjectives, positive ones, because this was just a great ride. We were also supported by the Motorcycle Amateur Radio Club, MARC, and the Coastal Amateur Radio Society, CARES. CARES was driving the SAG vehicles, and the MARC riders were out there making sure that the riders were safe, and if they saw anybody with a mechanical problem, calling in a SAG driver or one of the many ride marshals that were out there riding on the course, not only trying to help keep people stay safe, but also helping people with repairs on their bikes. And I think people appreciated that very much. I was a ride marshal this year, and on day one, I probably changed somewhere between 6 and 12 tubes, and I just lost count. I don't know how many there were, but there were quite a few. I kept stopping every few minutes, it seemed, trying to help people. And so it was my pleasure to do that. We got down to Carlsbad at the end of day one. We had a great party there that evening. Got up the next morning to a beautiful Chamber of Commerce Southern California day for our 40-mile ride from Carlsbad down to Mission Bay, where we had a great celebratory barbecue until most of us got on custom coaches and our bikes were carefully wrapped and placed gingerly on trucks for the ride back to Irvine and then the drive home from there. It was a great weekend. We're hoping to raise about $3 million for multiple sclerosis. We're getting there. We could always use your support. So please consider donating. Of course, there are links in the show notes. Well, that was my MS ride experience and something that I recommend that you do next year. And if you're interested, it's at biketofinishms.com, where you can find more information on that. But Curtis is now going to tell you about a ride that I need to do because I have some friends that are in the Bay Area and some friends that are involved in the MS Society up there. And this sounds like a great ride. I've ridden on some of these roads before, but not all of them. And Curtis is going to give you his perspective on the MS Waves to Wine Bike Tour. Take it away, Curtis.
Hello, my name's Curtis, and I'm a Fred, too. On September 29th and 30th, my wife, Tricia, and I took part in the MS-150 Waves to Wine Bicycle Tour. The ride's put on by the National Multiple Sclerosis Society to help raise awareness of and help raise money to find a cure for multiple sclerosis. The ride started with about 1,500 people. We masked in the shadow of SBC Park, where the San Francisco Giants play, rode along the waterfront and then climbed up to the Golden Gate Bridge. We couldn't have had a more beautiful morning. The light was just gorgeous, and going across the bridge was amazing. I got pretty excited about it. I talked to my tape recorder while I did it.
I am riding my bike across the Golden Gate Bridge right now. It is breathtaking. The sun is just barely up. There are sailboats on the water. Just the light is like something out of a beautiful painting. There's cyclists everywhere. It is just, it's breathtaking. Absolutely flipping breathtaking.
Well, you can tell I was pretty excited about the bridge, but others had their favorite sections.
What was your favorite part of the ride so far?
I'll ditto the coming up on Stinson, looking back towards San Francisco and seeing the rocks, the water, the sun, the sky. It's all beautiful.
This ride was so cool that I think everybody had a different opinion about what the best part was.
What's your favorite part of the ride?
I thought the hills were really amazing.
Do you like the up part or the down part?
A little bit of both.
Right. So. How about your favorite part so far?
I like lunch.
Lunch? Well, how was lunch?
Yeah, the views are amazing. I like the pace line.
Boy, the hills were amazing. It was only 75 miles, but it was more up and down than I'd ever done. You know, it wasn't just a climb. It was a few long climbs, but then we would climb and climb, then zoom down, and then have to grunt out and zoom down. So for something that didn't have a lot of total elevation, it was pretty intense. Of course, lunch was also good. As a matter of fact, the entire way this thing was run was really good, from lunch to the support we got from the people on the road.
The staff on the MS ride rocks. They are awesome.
Wait, say that again just in case I miss it.
The staff on the MS ride totally rocks.
Not only were they great with lunch and everything else, but they also got help from other organizations that were truly wonderful to have on the route.
The Gold Wing Tour Association is providing like support and some safety stuff for this event,
along with other groups as well.
And other groups as well. So what do you guys know that like maybe nobody else knows? That's
what I'm thinking here. Is, you know what, if we get away with riding on our motorcycles the way they get riding on their bikes, we would be like exposed more.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Spandex and asphalt don't mix for us. Leathers are good.
Yeah.
Kevlar's better.
Yeah.
Kevlar bicycle jerseys. Kevlar bicycle shorts. Hey, there's an entrepreneurial opportunity. But there were also other organizations helping out.
This is Net Control.
Net Control. What is that the name of your group?
Net Control is the radio group that keeps track of the race.
Uh-huh.
Okay, they have ham radio operators out in the field at the rest stops, and that's the way we direct the SAGs, which I have control of, you know, and we try to get people to go to, you know, get the SAGs in the right place to bring people in that need to be brought in.
As hardworking and wonderful as they are, I still have a different group that was really my most favorite group that was there to help out the riders.
All right, I'm here at New Belgium. They're pouring beer for free. Is this the best booth or the very best booth ever?
It is the most popular booth. Everybody's coming here. We got them backed up pretty deep.
What kind of beer are people liking the most?
You know what? The surprise is a 1554. It's a dark beer, but very smooth. People just love it.
Well, I'd better have one then.
Okay, you got it.
Yeah, it was a blast. They were pouring also their fat tire beer, the bicycle-themed beer, and they were just really nice about it. A good time was indeed had at the end of the first day. Our second day started, and it was a mite cool.
So we're out here like on Sunday morning. It's what would you estimate the temperature to be away from the flaming pylon of warmth?
43 degrees.
43 degrees. Is that metric or
Fahrenheit.
Fahrenheit. All right. So how do you feel after yesterday? You ready to do this again?
Hi. Ready to go?
Ready to go.
What did you like yesterday?
The weather.
It's beautiful. Good weather. How about you?
The weather and the scenery and just the whole thing. This is my first time, so it's really awesome.
This ride really was amazing, despite the 42 degrees and my fingers just aching for the first half hour. It was beautiful, but it was also something else. Other rides I've done to raise money have been more abstract. This ride was personal. There were people there that had MS that were riding. There were people that could no longer ride, but they were staffing booths or helping out in some way. The riders often had signs or pictures on their jerseys telling us who they were riding for. This ride was about people. The National MS Society did a great job of keeping why we were doing this in the forefront. So even though we were having a great time on a beautiful route, we were constantly reminded about MS and that maybe there's a way to fight it and maybe there's a way to cure it. But back to the ride itself, it meandered up through wine country, just some beautiful, beautiful scenery, the grapes growing. You could smell the wine as we went by many of the just premier California wineries, some of my favorites, the Rochambeau Winery, David's Bynum. We went by David Cafaro, a very small winemaker who I actually stopped and purchased a case of wine to have mailed home later. It was just beautiful. We ended the day in a wonderful park where we were served food and drink, and there were massage tables there, which I availed myself of, and it made the ride home a lot nicer. But still, I think the MS thing was on everybody's minds. So let me play for you some of the parting words of the people that I rode with.
Anything you want to add, like if you were saying something to the entire universe?
Come join us next year.
Oh, good. How about you? You have anything to say to the greater world?
The greater world?
Yeah.
Oh, man. God, that's have to be no profound pressure. This early in the morning. No pressure at all.
Yeah. Oh, my only God. On my second cup of coffee.
Yeah, let's do this every year.
You always have something more to give to other people.
Oh, ooh, there you go.
Ooh, that was good. Can you just say that again?
You always have something more to give to other people when you hurt or when you're tired or you think you can't go. You can still go.
Wow. Words to live by if you're a cyclist, or maybe just words to live by if you're a human being. But the ride was great. The people were wonderful, the food was good, the scenery was breathtaking, and the funds we raised go to a really important cause, the fight against multiple sclerosis. So this MS 150 was Waves to Wine. It takes place in Northern California, but there are other opportunities to participate in similar rides around the country. I bet David and the Fredcast will have some hints on how you could help fight multiple sclerosis, but this ride was great. I'm hoping you'll think about doing it.
Hey, Curtis, thanks so much for that report. And again, thanks for your donation. By the way, if you're interested in making a donation to MS, Curtis is looking for them as well. And I have put a link in the show notes to how you can donate to Curtis's fundraising efforts on behalf of the Multiple Sclerosis Society. Well, switching gears a little bit, Halloween is upon us, and thanks to listener David, I want to tell you about an accessory that you can put on your bike, although I was telling him I don't think it's going to look so great on my Colnago, but an accessory you can put on your bike that would be perfect for Halloween. I put a link in the show notes to a product called the Reaper Skull Stem, and this is something that you have to see for yourself. So go to www.thefredcast.com and click the link for the show notes. This is show number 85, and click the link that says Reaper Skull Stem in the show notes. This is something that will definitely scare the kids on your block. Now, another item that a listener told me about, and this is something I teased earlier in the show, is the official team launch for Team Slipstream Chipotle. Slipstream has invited fans to spend an evening with the 2008 team and honor the Davis Finney Foundation. This is going to take place November the 14th in Boulder, Colorado. The main attraction of the evening will be the introduction of the 2008 team, including an open forum question and answer session with the riders. And this will culminate with a live auction, which will include special contributions from David Miller, Dave Zabriskie, and the Davis Finney Foundation. If you're not familiar with the Finney Foundation, this was an organization designed to accelerate Parkinson's research because Davis Finney, a well-known professional cyclist, is himself a Parkinson's victim. Additional auction items could include a 2008 Team Edition Felt F1 bike, ordered specifically to your specs, a Zip 808 wheel set, an evening with the team physiologist Alan Lim, a day with Slipstream rider Lucas User, dinner with Jonathan Vodders and David Miller at Boulder's finest restaurant, Frasca, a fully customized saddle from team sponsor Physic, and much, much more. Tickets are available at slipstreamsports.com. I put a link in the show notes to where you can get more information. I was one of the listeners graciously offered to pay for me to attend the event, but unfortunately, I will be out of town for business. This would be one event I would like to go to. But if you're in the Boulder area and you are able to attend, please bring a recorder and send me some audio. I will be sure to get it on the show. And if you're able to get me some good stuff, I'll see what I can do to get you some product from some of our friends out there in the bike industry. So that's November 14th, 2007 in Boulder. That's the Slipstream meet and greet. More info in the show notes. Now, an event that's coming up just after that is one that I've talked to you about before, but I just have to mention again, because this really is one of the great events in group rides in the United States. It's the El Tour de Tucson. This takes place in Tucson, Arizona, November 17th, 2008. Like the MS Beta Bay Bike Tour, this is the 25th anniversary of the El Tour and is expected to be the largest ever. As a matter of fact, there's even a possibility that registrations may close prior to the ride due to the number of riders. They're expecting a record-breaking attendance of 10 to 11,000 cyclists. In addition to this being the El Tour de Tucson, the normal rides ranging from a kid's ride on up to a 109-mile ride and everything in between, this is also going to be the national bike rally for the League of American Bicyclists, something we've talked about here on the show before. There are links in the show notes. If you're in the area or if you have the ability to be in the area, I'd urge you to take part in this one. It's always a great, fun event and a great ride. Last but not least, if you are interested in track racing or if you're already into track racing and you're in British Columbia, the Burnaby Velodrome is hosting a couple of events that you might be interested in. First of all, November 9th through the 11th is the Burnaby Velodrome Fall Challenge. This is going to be a weekend that will include some of the best racers in North America, and it will include match sprints, Karen, and all your favorite track events. There are links in the show notes for the Burnaby Velodrome Fall Challenge, November 9th through the 11th. But what is perhaps the most exciting event going on at the Burnaby Velodrome is the 6 days of Burnaby. We've talked about six-day events on the Spokesman podcast before. Six-day events are steeped in tradition and in history and can be some of the most interesting, challenging, and exciting events in track racing. This should be a great 6 days of racing, and they already have 14 pro elite teams signed up. December 31st through January 5th in Burnaby, British Columbia. Links are in the show notes for the 6 days of Burnaby. Well, that is almost it for this edition of the Fredcast at almost 1 hour and 20 minutes. Thanks for sticking with me. Before we get to the contact information, once again, thoughts and prayers go out to everybody affected by the fires in Southern California, whether that's friends, teammates, or just the folks that we rode, Emily and I rode on the ride across California with, because they also are in that evacuation zone, and we are hoping against hope that all of their homes are safe. So our thoughts and prayers go out to them. If you like the Fredcast and you'd like to spread the word, please do so. There's a number of ways that you can do that. One thing we've been talking about for a very long time, please vote for us on Podcast Alley. There is an easy way to vote on the Fredcast website. Just scroll down on the left-hand side, you put your email address in, you submit your vote, and then you confirm your vote when they send you a confirming email. It's just that easy. It helps us get new listeners. Tell your friends and your riding buddies about the Fredcast and encourage them to subscribe or go to iTunes and write a review about the show. We always appreciate that. Now, there's lots of ways that you can follow the Fredcast and lots of ways that you can contact me. You can follow the website at www.thefredcast.com. I am occasionally posting interesting tidbits there. You can also follow my Twitter feed. My Twitter username is Fredcast. Of course, you can send audio comments in email or just text comments and email. The email address is thefredcast@gmail.com. You can put an audio comment in there, or you can call the listener hotline at area code 206-203-FRED. You can call our Skype line at area code 435-258-6373. That's 435-258-6FRED. Or you can go to thefredcast.com, and there is a link right there on the right-hand side of the page. You click it, and you use the microphone on your computer, and it sends the audio comment directly to me. Well, that's going to do it for the show. Thank you so much for listening. Thanks for staying subscribed. It is great to be with you. It is great to have you here. I'm going to end tonight, as I do every show, with PodSafe Cycling Music from the PodSafe Music Network at music.podshow.com. Tonight's PodSafe Cycling Music is by Lee Coulter. Lee is a resident of Encinitas, California, well in the path of those fires. And so, Lee, we're hoping you're doing well. Tonight's song is called Love in a Bottle. And I've got links in the show notes for iTunes, Podshow, as well as Lee's own website. Until next week, thanks for sticking with us. Enjoy the music, but most of all, enjoy the ride.
Begin again. There's a vixen in the middle end with the friend. She's wiggling at Eminem. Such a beauty lost in the melody, like Aphrodite back from mythology. Just a mystery of her body. Stops a body, it should be a felony. This kind of hot don't make you walk the water with the mind of a maniac in love. The mind said, I wanna put your love in the bottle. Maybe they should push your love in the like crazy, and I try but my knees get lazy, when you bring around somebody, save me, baby, everybody just step back, cause there's a being, a phenomenon in front of us, can't battle it, tame or settle it, cause she got some love that'll make you wanna rattle it, this kind of heart don't make you work, no, I don't want your mind, I'm a maniac for love, I don't say that I wanna put your love in the bottle, baby, they should put your love in the sexy, you don't even know, girl. On the way, I just couldn't care less. Everybody there just staring at the goddess. You go, girl. What a show, girl. So sexy, you don't even know, silly and just a killing and looking over, I stop and begin again. There's a vixen in the middle end with the friend, she's wiggling at Eminem. Such a beauty lost in the melody, like Aphrodite back from mythology. Just a mystery of her body, stops a body, it should be a felony. This kind of heart don't make you walk the water with the mind. I'm a maniac in love, but the model said I wanna put your love in the bottle. Maybe they should put your love in the bottle. This kind of heart don't make you walk the water with the mind. I'm a maniac in love, but the model said I wanna put your love in the bottle. Maybe they should put your love in the bottle. This kind of heart don't make you walk with the water with the mind. I'm a maniac in love, but the model said I wanna put your love in the bottle. Baby, they should put your love in the bottle.